This is The Thirsty Developer, episode number 34 for Monday, August 8th, 2008. John Box on Windows Mobile Development. In today's episode, our host, Larry, Brian, and David sit down with John Box and talk about the architecture of Windows Mobile development, the tools that you need to develop on Windows Mobile, and some of the cool new features in Windows Mobile 6.1. Let's listen in.
So, hey everyone, this is Dave. I got Larry and Brian with me, and actually we're with one of our cohorts, John Box, sitting in a swanky lounge at the Hotel Saks. We just got done with some internal meetings, and John Box, who we have with us, is actually one of our resident experts on Windows Mobile. So that's kind of the topic of the show today, is just talk about some of our Windows Mobile development efforts and some of the stuff that we got coming up. So, John, why don't you introduce yourself, you know, who you are, what you do kind of thing.
Okay, I'm John Box. I am based in Memphis, Tennessee.
The John Box.
Well, there are other John Boxes, I'm sure, but yeah, hopefully I'm only one of a kind. But that remains to be seen. We'll see after this half hour or whatever this is. So I'm based in Memphis, Tennessee. Been with Microsoft for a couple of years. Sitting here with my DP counterparts, the best org in Microsoft, I would think.
Well, of course.
So I've been doing software development for 20-plus years. I'm in my early 40s, so it's kind of my whole professional career at this point. Got plenty of gray hair to go with it, as opposed to you guys don't.
Oh, no, I got the gray hair, but it has nothing to do with the job. It has to
you
do with the girls.
Excellent. So I've done a little bit of everything. I mean, Clipper, mainframe, wire, okay. Novell. I mean, just I've done a little bit of everything over the years, management.
But you actually, you know, we were talking earlier, you actually wrote the book on Windows Mobile Development, is that right?
Yes, it was the book. There's plenty of other folks who have written good mobility books, but a guy named Dan Fox and I wrote a book on, it was called Building Solutions with the Compact Framework. So it was a mobility book. It was early, you know, .NET Compact Framework 1.0 time frame, and it was really not a developer reference, but it was a architecture guide because there was plenty of gaps in our mobility development story back then. So it was really a here's how you get started, here's what you need to think about. It was targeted to .NET people who knew the desktop and server stuff but would might want to taste that mobility story.
Right. So let's talk about that. So when we talk about things like, you know, the Visual Studio tool, I mean, obviously if you're a .NET developer, chances are you're using Visual Studio to build your applications, but Visual Studio is used to build all kinds of applications, including mobile applications. So
it's a good story.
So I know there's a lot of there's actually some confusion about what that exactly means about mobile applications, because there's mobile meaning phone per se, but there's also things like Windows CE. So I mean, could we kind of get a quick kind of overview of the different types of mobile development
so
that we're talking
about
here?
One confusion is the type of application from the perspective of a mobile web app versus an app that resides on the device, right? That's one confusion, and that's tough on customers. We have, obviously, this compact framework thing that's been around for a while and keeps evolving. We also have the part of ASP.NET that's called mobile controls, another cool technology that's semi-static. You know, they haven't been really innovating on it, but you know, product groups still use it internally. I mean, if you look at SharePoint, it's using ASP.NET and that mobile controls piece to do the mobility part of SharePoint. So that's still in play. Today, our mobile web story for mobility is not a great story. It's a good story, but it's not clear because people got used to things they thought were called like the internet toolkit, and then we had the mobile controls part of ASP.NET, and then we really haven't heard anything for a while, and then with Visual Studio 2008, they took the designer capability out, and that further confused people because they still want to build those kind of pages. But the good thing is that you use Visual Studio 2008, you can do XHTML-based web pages, and you can still go after that cross-device mobile web kind of application. So that's one part of the conversation. And then you have the other side of it, which is all of our capabilities. There's a developer story, and there's also our OS story. And we have a pretty broad OS story, because most people think just one is mobile, but it's not just one is mobile, right? There's a micro framework, the .NET micro framework. There's the embedded XP, and now what they call Windows Embedded Standard. And there's a framework and there's a roadmap for that. And then we have the more traditional things, Windows CE, which Windows Mobile is actually built on top of Windows CE, which is another confusion point that we have. And CE is actually a wildly used OS. If you think about, like, you know, a lot of people don't realize the ATMs, a lot of ATMs in the world are running Windows CE. Might be scary, but
and there's a lot of point of sale type devices too.
WePause and all that kind of stuff, yeah.
Right. So I guess this is one of the things that I run into commonly when I talk to people is that oftentimes that we're told that Microsoft gives too much choice. And it sounds like as I'm an architect, if I've been brought to my business, you know, customers that, hey, we need to do something on the mobile platform, that I have to make a lot of decisions on those things that you just picked. What are the rules of thumb that John Box uses? Because when you talk to customers, you know, you're going to ask them a few questions, they're going to give you the answers, and you know, you're going to do a lot of listening about what they want to get out of it.
Yeah.
But it's kind of what's your rule of thumb? Like, when would you say, all right, I'm going to use mobile controls or just a web-based interface versus I want to really light up the features of the device itself?
It's the same kind of questions that you would ask if you were thinking about a smart client. Because think about it, it's the same exact architecture. It's just a different device and a different, you know, screen real estate factor and that kind of thing. But it's the same exact architecture question. So one of the first things I'll ask a customer is, if it's an application for an executive, if that executive is going to be on an airplane, how do you want them to interact with that data? Can they interact with that data? So if it's, you know, offline capability, now we're talking true smart client, then we've got to support that, and it's probably an application that goes on the device as opposed to a mobile web story. So then if they say, well, no, that's not important to us, cross-device, cross-platform is important to us, then now we're talking, you know, a web story.
So Dave started in asking this question, and maybe we're getting ahead of ourselves, but, you know, the tool set is Visual Studio for this kind of development. What is it, from a developer's perspective, do they need anything extra when you're talking about Visual Studio when you want to start developing? So I've never developed a Windows Mobile application before. How would I just get going? Because, you know, I think there's a couple extra steps they might need
there
to take to do that.
There are. So, and that's a great question. And it could be, if we wanted to go over the history of it, it could be really kind of even more confusing. But let's talk current story of Visual Studio 2008. We have these mechanisms we call SDKs, right? There's a Windows Mobile 5 SDK that comes built in with Visual Studio 2008. Now, why is that important? Because it comes with these emulators, and the emulators are free. Anybody can get a hold of them. You just download it. And in this case, the earlier Windows Mobile 5 version comes built in. When you open up a compact framework application template out of Visual Studio, and you start doing a little coding, and then you press F5, that emulator is going to fire up whichever one you pick for that kind of application, and you're going to get this true debugging designer experience right there out of the box.
And it's actually going to look like the phone.
Well, you know? And actually the emulator runs the true OS.
Right.
It has, at the very bottom, there's a hardware abstraction layer that converts it to x86, but it runs the real OS. So, yeah, it's pretty realistic. The only thing you might have to deal with, like, hardware differences. If you had some peripherals that for a specific device that you don't have in an emulator, you might have differences like that, but you can do some mocking.
And there's also built-in templates because, you know, with the Windows Mobile platform, there's a variety of actual phones you can get. Some of them have screens that are the full size of the phone. They look more like the size of, I'm very old school. They look more like, you know, the size of the old iPacks.
Yeah, you know? Well, that's another confusion point in our story. Yes, we give a lot of choices, but another choice point is that, you know, some of us are going to talk about pocket PC or touch devices versus smartphones.
Right.
Right, and that was two different kind of OSs, and now those are merging again. They're still different today, and then they've changed the names of that. So we don't say smartphone and pocket PC officially anymore. We're supposed to say, you know, Windows Mobile Professional versus Windows Mobile Standard, and then actually Windows Mobile Classic for the iPad. The original iPad, no phone, touch-based device is Classic.
Well, I've been wondering why we've been throwing all those terms around.
Well, yeah, yeah. Any good Microsoft employee has to know at least 25 acronyms,
right,
and product names. So,
but even with, you know, if you look at the same class of phone, you know, like the smartphone, you know, you and I, you know, in our pockets right now, we both have, you know, smartphones, but they might have a different size screen.
Yeah,
and that's one of the things that we have to account for. And as you're building the application, the emulator is important because you may want to pull it up and see how it looks on one versus the other.
And not just that, you might want to deal with, let's say that you have an application that's going to, you know, it be intended for one specific device. Life's pretty simple that way. But what if it's going to be on both sides of that smartphone touch-based device? And then you're going to have to deal with, you know, screens that can change orientation because of the flip capabilities and the slide-out capabilities that the newer devices have. There's all sorts of opportunities there for debugging and trying to figure out how to deal with orientation-aware runtime
right.
decisions.
So, you know, kind of going back, you know, throwing the word term devices around.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we talk about, you kind of brought this up earlier, there's Windows CE that sits at the base, if you will,
yeah.
which is essentially that base operating system for really any device, whether that's a cable set-top box or, like you said, like an ATM machine. And then on top of there is what we have, where we bring the mobile platform on top of, you know, running on top of the Windows CE yep. platform yep. as well. And that brings us into the mobile capabilities when we start talking about mobile phones. So what does that landscape look like? What do we have today? And as a .NET developer, can I build applications targeting Windows CE, or is it, I'm just building applications targeting mobile devices utilizing the mobile framework?
So you can target both of those, right? And you could pick app templates that would target both of those. The more friendlier application is going to target a Windows mobile device, all right? And this is one of the things I tell folks when people ask me, how do you get started today? Where should I start at? What kind of device? You know, what version of the framework? What version of Visual Studio? Absolutely, the minimal point I'd recommend to people today is Visual Studio 2008, at least Windows Mobile 5. Windows Mobile 6 is great too, but I wouldn't go back past Windows Mobile 5 if you had to pick a starting point. In this case, so we're all familiar with, you know, we build an application type. It's going to have a .NET framework version associated with it. But in this case, Windows Mobile comes with an additional managed code library that's built into the OS. It's not the compact framework. And that particular library fills in the gaps that we have in compact framework. So things like eventing with, like, you know, do I currently have a network connection? Or is my phone connection working? There's almost 200 different event types that you can tap into there, and that kind of serves as a foundation for making a more mature, robust application. If you go to the CE model, which there's obviously very good CE based devices, you don't get that extra library, and someone has to code that plumbing themselves, and that's a problem because, as we all know, the plumbing typically is what gets you in trouble, and it's another, you know, maintenance responsibility you're going to have to carry that code forward. So anytime you can utilize someone else's plumbing that's already built, tested, that's a good thing.
So the big John Box best practice is target Windows Mobile 5 or higher if you can, only if you have a specific business requirement to support something that, because of the plumbing benefits that you
well,
get
that,
there.
Exactly. And that sets up the more enterprise-ready kind of application. Because we can start talking about nice UI, we can talk about our offline capabilities with SQL CE, and then the proper plumbing things to detect certain situations that help, you know, detect power issues, detect network connectivity issues. When can I start sync? All those kind of things that you might want to do.
And you mentioned in that conversation the compact framework. And I don't think we've really covered what is the CF at this point. So maybe you could, you know, now that we know that we've got that plumbing layer that's below the CF, maybe we could talk about what the CF is.
Okay. So it's an excellent point. The compact framework is a .NET library. It's probably what I've heard different numbers here, but it's like basically a fifth of the size of the regular .NET framework, something like that. And it covers a good chunk of the programming capability. So, as I've said before, you could argue that's a better framework than our .NET framework. Because if you think about .NET framework, at least before .NET 3.5 Service Pack 1, it's a very large deployment, right? Now, 3.5 Service Pack 1, the client profile stuff, that story changes, you know, 30 meg is a good deal. Compact frameworks is like 6 meg, all right? And it's an excellent story. And it does all the basic things that we would think of a .NET framework should do, right? It's got a CLR. It's got the base classes. And they try to do the same style of classes that the regular framework does. So one of our beauties of our development story is when you go to the Visual Studio route and you learn that .NET skill set, I mean, think about how many different kinds of application types can be built. That's all good stuff. And that's a story that people should, we should be telling that all the time and make sure that folks understand that, you know, you're not just jumping in to learn one style application. You kind of get an investment with us, and we're gonna take you a long ways.
All right, so kind of like looking at the what do I need as a developer to build these applications, right? Can I just have the .NET framework to build an application on top of a mobile device, or do I also need the additional mobile framework, whether that's mobile 5 or mobile 6? And we'll kind of talk about what the difference between those two in a second.
Right.
But you kind of look at the compact framework in itself. You'd like the base classes. It's file system access. It's file. It's your string libraries and stuff like that. Can I build an application with just that, or do I also need this mobile framework? I guess my question is what is in that mobile framework that's not in the compact framework?
The mobile framework versus the compact framework?
Well, like the mobile SDK.
Okay, so the mobile SDK is a supplemental set of guidance. It's SDK samples. It's, how to do this and that. It's the emulators. There's also some extra utility tools. So, cellular emulator. They have this one utility that you can use to emulate phone events while you're testing. So how could I simulate that this fake virtual piece of software we call the emulator is receiving a phone call? These extra utilities, like the cellular emulator, will let you force that, and also do SMS messages, send and receive, so that you can test whatever you need to do.
I guess when you look at the SMS, as an example, you talked about checking that your battery is fully charged before you run this application because it requires a lot of power, or detecting events like turning on and off the mobile device. Is that coming from the compact framework side, or is that coming from the mobile SDK side?
That is coming from, and Windows Mobile, it's coming from an extra managed code library that's specific to Windows Mobile, and it's not included in the compact framework. So that's why when I said a while ago, I was very specific. Target the Windows Mobile platform if you can, because of this extra library that has capabilities not built into the compact framework outright.
And so we're talking about the compact framework a lot here, and so I know in some mobile development that I've done in the past, you were talking about also different versions of Windows Mobile, right? So
yeah.
As developers, how are they going to know, what are they using? Because there are different versions of the compact framework as well.
Yep.
And if, a certain version of Windows Mobile is going to have the right framework, and is there opportunities for them to supplement those frameworks that come with those OSs? How does that work? And if, like, say, for instance, 3.5 came out, I don't think, the mobile 5 obviously is not going to have that compact framework in there.
Right.
How do developers, is there still capabilities for developers to still use that framework or the richness that maybe comes with 3.5?
So we're back to our .NET deployment story challenge, right? Good thing is that with Windows Mobile 6, we at least have compact framework version 2 included in ROM. Right, and SQL CE.
Nice.
So that's a good story. Windows Mobile 5, OEMs had the ability to do that. It was optional, and a lot did not include the framework. So that's a challenge. So our customers will obviously have this issue of how do you get the library to those devices pre-Windows Mobile 6.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if it's Windows Mobile 6 and on, they have the issue of what if I want to take advantage of something later than compact framework version 2.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another difference in the mobile story. There's not a compact framework, V3 or 3.0, right? That particular, the team who did that work, they built a 2.0, and then we didn't see a 3.0, but we do see 3.5. And that 3.0 happens to be included in the XNA effort. That team did the same effort.
Okay.
So that's kind of where that's at. The 3.5, why would you want to try to get 3.5 pushed to old devices? Because there's some nice additions. I mean, Link is one of the major ones. And I think the Windows Mobile 6 SDK has some very nice additions that, for example, imagine if you were writing as an ISV an application that might target all the mobile devices running Windows Mobile 5 and 6. How would you do automated testing? So the newer set of emulators that come with the Windows Mobile 6 SDK have automation interfaces so that you could talk to them via .NET, fire up the emulator, configure it to act like it's a certain kind of device, and then have it do unit testing and things like that. So we have a pretty complete story at this point, and obviously we have some things to enhance on our platform, and that's where we'll see hopefully this fall when we get to the PDC, we'll see some more announcements around that.
And so in that development and deployment story, If a developer still wanted to use a framework that's not on the device, they still have an option to create, I would assume, a setup file that'll that'll deploy that as they kind of distribute their application. They could still do that.
We have the same Redis story and redistributables that you can download and connect to the MSI to make sure they're deployed.
Okay, cool.
And we also have other, you know, systems that can, you know, do the push of these apps and libraries down to a device. And then we also have added here recently our own management story with the device manager capability out of System Center. So that's another nice addition that will help that out as well.
So kind of continuing along the landscape of devices and development story and the frameworks, the big buzz in development in general now is we have Silverlight, right? And we announced that at Mix that Silverlight is going to come to the mobile platform.
Right.
How do you think, or what do you see that may change how developers think about development? Do you think that will at all as far as developing for mobile devices? Because this is going to be a platform that's just not going to be on our stack, you know?
Well, I think what's exciting to me about this particular story is that just like we do with our regular Silverlight, this may be our first opportunity to have a true .NET rich interface that's multi-browser, multi-platform. I can't wait till the product group will finally claim exactly what they're going to do and when they're going to do it. I mean, that's what we're all waiting for at this point. And we'll get that first glimpse at PDC. That'll be very important to see what's announced there. So that'll give our next chapter, our next saga, if you will. And we'll go from there. But I think people are very excited about, can I do a richer interface on Microsoft devices? And then, can I reuse that same interface to go against other platforms in the mobility world? That's going to be, I think, a very strategic move for Microsoft.
Yeah, Silverlight, it's very exciting because one of the things is that it's going to be supported beyond, you know, our platform. You know, Nokia announced at Mix, and Mix was a lot of announcements. You know, there were no bits that you could grab a hold of.
Yep.
You know, they announced that they're going to support that on their high-end Symbian devices. And Nokia ships a lot of phones, like, every day.
Right.
You know, but I think to me, Silverlight Mobile is just another choice, you know, in the mix, right? You talked about, you know, this is like a rich platform, but still delivered via the web. It's not going to eliminate the need for a compact framework application that's running on the device.
Architecturally. That is correct. I mean, if you think about the kind of things that we can build today with our current stack, I mean, just think from a parallel architecture, smart clients. We have the full-blown smart client architecture that can be built today. One of the things that I think people would probably wish that Microsoft did a better job is our user interface on the device. And I think Silverlight Mobile helps fill that gap in. But, you know, several years from now, who knows what the kind of things these devices can do? Because they become more powerful every year, every generation. And they are getting more like desktop computers. So I think, you know, obviously we're going to have to look at, you know, WPF-style capabilities in some form. And Silverlight Mobile is just one step that direction. I think it'll get much bigger, and we'll have to keep doing those things.
Yeah, when there are multiple screen resolutions and all the challenges that we have with the different devices.
VGA-style resolution, I think that's a...
Yeah, vector-based markup is very powerful. Yeah. Dave, do you have a question?
So, you know, just kind of like, you know, this discussion, just thinking about it, you know, from a development standpoint, you know, as a developer, if I'm a .NET developer today, I guess what are the challenges for me to start building mobile applications, or where are the stumbling blocks that I'm going to hit? What are the hurdles?
That's a great question, because it's very easy to get started, but sometimes it can be hard to complete in a mature way.
Yeah, there's different things you need to think about.
Absolutely.
I power off the device, what happens? The battery runs out, what happens?
It's not any different, though, from the kind of things you need to consider if you're building an application that's going to go on your laptop. It's the same set of thinking. The technologies are a little bit different. I mean, yeah, it's a smaller framework, but it's still SQL CE, and it's the same SQL CE that runs on both sides, right? Same version, same great capabilities in that database, embeddable database, lighter weight than SQL Express, and easy to get installed and get started.
I guess you kind of bring up an interesting thing there from an architectural standpoint. is the architecture different? Because if I'm, let's think, you know, I'm building a line of business application that sits in an office in a work group somewhere, they have direct tie to a database. So in this case, if I'm a mobile workforce, let's say, do I have a snapshot of the database living on my device that syncs periodically? And how does that synchronization take place and those types of things?
So look at it this way, too. If you look at the direction that Microsoft as a company is going with smart client capabilities in Visual Studio 2008, you see SQL CE pop up through there a lot. So the interesting thing is SQL CE is used by a lot of products. Underneath the hood, a lot of people don't realize it. I mean, Zune uses SQL CE. Visual Studio 2008 uses SQL CE. So you're talking about a heavily used database that's rock solid, fast, lightweight, and as a .NET developer, it's very easy for us to code against it because it's one of the ADO.NET data providers that comes with the Compact Framework. One of two. The other one being SQL Server. All right? So we get all the goodness of our ADO.NET story. Very easy to understand it and get to work with it right away. So that's all good news. The challenges come in with a device that's constrained and people thinking with a desktop mentality of, I've got a huge 19-inch screen here. Surely I could put all that into a small set of screen real estate and then all the accompanying business logic and all the accompanying data that should come with that. Those were the challenges come in, and people have to be a little bit more constrained with their ideas and make sure that the important things are being done. And you also have to look at user experience. You have to look at the kind of activities you do with the screen, because we've all seen how Larry types. And I'm just thinking that Larry, on a smaller device, he might have to poke at it with the stylus, or if it didn't have a small slide-out keyboard with the size of his hands, he's going to have a challenge. So from an architectural perspective, you have to start thinking about, from a user requirements perspective, you have to think about data entry versus, reporting of information.
Yeah, I'm going to text you a nasty email, but it'll be misspelled. So
that's fine. You won't be the first person to misspell John Box. I mean, J-O-N-B-O-X is pretty simple, but people mess it up all the time.
So, you know, going back to kind of the architecture, is it possible? I mean, because we talk about, you know, architecting solutions that, you know, you kind of have a back end that you could put multiple front ends in front of. Can a mobile front end be part of that same architecture? Or if you're building a mobile solution, is it something completely, you know, is it different?
So the conversation, let me just pull it back. I'm going to answer it a little bit differently. When I talk to customers, and I'm based in Tennessee, so I'm covering, you know, as an architect evangelist, I'm talking to customers in Tennessee, Kentucky, Southern Ohio.
Right? So and so that's why you have to have the accent, right?
Well, I was born with it, unfortunately.
All right.
I haven't been able to figure out how to get rid of it, and it works a lot. I mean, down south, if I say I'm an evangelist, I can get discounts in any major restaurant in Tennessee. So the Southern accent with the title is a great thing.
You know, they say that the South is a place. East, Northwest, those are just directions?
Yeah.
Exactly. Is that true?
Yeah. Exactly. So anyway, to answer the question, I think it's important to step back with a customer. And even, you know, as developers are listening to this, they should think about, from a business standpoint, how do I add value to the business? And I think one of the discussions that we need to have is that don't think you're going to build a set of services in this application. Don't think about one client type only. And this is going back to that. Our Visual Studio story and .NET story is great. We can build a lot of types of clients that can consume these services. And some make sense for some scenarios. Some make better sense for other scenarios. But think about how many ways you can enable a channel to your application. So is it, you know, can it be consumed in SharePoint? Can it be consumed through a browser, a mobile web browser versus a large browser? Can it be consumed in a WPF app that's a smart client, standalone, works in offline mode? And then the same story can be applied to Compact Framework. So that's not exactly what you asked, but I just thought it's important to think about. We have a very complete story, a very broad story, and people should take advantage of it.
Yeah, and to sum up in feedback, I think that, you know, one of the general things that I'm hearing is that if you're doing desktop applications, you know, that are fat client, they're assuming fast connection to a network. It's going to be a little paradigm shift for you. But if you're designing smart client applications that are meant to be working disconnected.
That's right. Mentally, same. Very similar.
There's only a few differences between them, you know, screen real estate and all that.
But don't try to boil the ocean. Don't try to build your entire desktop application into it, because you're constrained with memory. You're constrained with CPU. Yes, it's the full, you know, somewhat the full desktop side or client side of the .NET framework. And you can, you know, apply the same principles, but they need to be refined a little bit, because you are gonna have issues if you don't respect that.
I have as an architect, you know, I have a specific tool in my toolbox that I can use. It's message queuing.
Yeah.
You know, when I've got
a
desktop application, tell me about the message queuing story on the mobile platform.
So, you know, it's an interesting thing, because I've gone through some research recently on this, and we don't have a lot of customers who use message queue on Windows Mobile. It is there. It has the same capability as we do on the full desktop and server. There's a few differences, and I have so few customers who ask me about it, I don't even keep up with it. I don't even look at it anymore. I know it's there because I get a question every once in a while, but I just don't even check it out anymore. But all the same principles apply there that you would typically do for a desktop, you know, message queue interface. And Compact Framework does have managed wrappers to talk to those queues.
And so, you know, we're talking about kind of technologies that we use in regular full-screen laptop, desktop development, web development, and we kept talking about SQL CE, and I think that's one of the important technologies that a lot of, I think, developers don't get, that they do have that full richness. So can you talk a little bit more about SQL CE specifically and, you know, what might be included in, because there's versionings in that too, right?
There is.
There's differences in that and what you can do, I think.
And which platforms they support.
And which platforms, yep. And I think important things like synchronization, and because you said that there's a lot of different scenarios where you might be offline or online. And
right.
So just a little bit more about SQL CE specifically and how developers can at least understand what they're getting themselves into when they develop
right,
for
right.
it.
So the list is complicated enough that I don't memorize which versions go with which mobile platform versions.
Yeah.
I had to go blog and write a link to it because I can't remember
them all. Right.
So I put it in my blog as a way to
yeah.
do that. So the other thing is they change between product names and version numbers, which makes the SQL story even tougher for me as an old man. I just can't keep up with it.
Right.
So, and then what's the right name for that? I keep saying SQL CE because of the name changes. Today's official term, I think, is like SQL Server Compact, right? But we've said SQL Compact Edition. We've said SQL Mobile. If we go back over the years.
It was SQL everywhere for like a week earlier last year, wasn't it?
Well, let's talk to Steve Lasker about that kind of stuff.
Okay.
He'll appreciate me mentioning this. What we should talk about is if you go and look for Steve Lasker's blog, Lasker, Steve is like one of the best voices on the SQL CE story because he's one of the PMs on the team. He still gets out to the field, does all these big talks at all the big conferences. So he's in tune with what customers want, and he's also driving those features back into the product team. So a good guy to know, and he's got one of the best blogs on that topic.
And we'll put his blog address in the show notes for everybody, so they can go out to thirstydeveloper.com and get that. The question I had is that earlier we talked about what was in the box with Visual Studio 2008, and we started talking about the emulators and all that, and what we didn't cover off was the additional stuff that you can get that's not in the Visual Studio 2008 box.
So the SDK?
Yeah, like the 6.0 SDK, you know? Or
in the box, Visual Studio 2008 install in the box is Windows Mobile 5 SDK.
Right.
All right. So if you wanted the newer emulators, you do have to go to it, get a download, a free download, and it's the Windows Mobile 6 SDK.
And yeah, we'll put the link in the show notes.
Okay.
Well, I guess what's the difference between the 5 and 6 SDK? Because there's been a bit of advancement there, right?
There has been, and I think for most people, they won't have to know about the differences, right? Think about the device you're going to target, because a lot of times when people look at one of these applications, at some point, very early in that process, they get down to this is the single device that we're going to build for, if it's the first application that company's doing. So then that helps them decide which SDK do I need. And if it's the Windows Mobile 6 SDK, fine, get it, check out the emulators, and it's quite possible that the OEM might have some emulator configuration information to make it more specific for the device that they're selling that particular customer.
So,
and this is another important thing to talk about.
Right.
We don't sell Windows Mobile. Microsoft does not sell Windows Mobile to the public, right? You go to an OEM, to a carrier, to a device manufacturer, And that's the first line of defense for that customer with that OS support. And that's another confusing thing sometimes for people who are early in this learning curve of trying to figure out how to do mobile device applications.
Right, and like you said, I think you said earlier that OEMs also have a deciding factor on what goes into that device as far as our software.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. And people, you know, we have some OEMs who are based directly on Windows CE. They pick which pieces of Windows CE they want, and they build that out. And then we have Microsoft's selection of those components that we call Windows Mobile.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So just another trying to clarify to make it, you know, people get confused over that breakdown sometimes, and that's one of the first things we try to cover. And
right.
When we do a mobility lab, that's one of the first topics we hit.
Right. So, you know, kind of going back, you know, the difference between 5 and 6, if I'm not mistaken, one of those differences now in Mobile 6, you have access to the GPS information. Is that right?
That has been there in 5 as well.
Oh, it's in there in 5 as well?
Yeah, so there's an intermediate GPS driver, which is a good thing for you know, developers, because they don't have to understand any certain GPS interface. They just talk to that driver. And there's no direct support for that talking to that driver inside of the Compact framework. But if you go to the Windows Mobile 5 or Windows Mobile 6 SDK, there's a sample, a managed code sample there. And I've blogged about this actually just a month ago because one of the things I want to do, I've got a Blackjack, right? That's running Windows Mobile 6.1 and AT&T branded phone, my favorite device I've ever had. And I'm thinking about getting one for a new driver teenager in my family, my middle son. And hopefully he's not going to listen to this because I'm getting ready to share something. I don't want anybody to know. All right? So one of the things I'm interested in is that I've taken that managed code sample out of the SDK, and I can get, you know, heading, I can get altitude, but I can also get speed.
You're going to lowjack the guy.
So basically, yeah, I'm going to say, hey, son, I'm getting you this cool device. But in the back, I'm going to take advantage of a couple things, like talking to the GPS, right, and getting this information. And then the Compact framework, that managed code library I was telling you, this extra on Windows Mobile, it's got an SMS interceptor capability. So I can say, if the SMS message has this text at the beginning of the string, and there's some other formatting options, but one of the basic ones is, if I have a certain string of text at the beginning of the SMS message, this app can intercept that message so it doesn't show up in the regular text viewing message capability of the phone. And so now I can intercept that, and I can get things like, Dad wants an update on where you're at, or Dad wants an update every 5 minutes where you're at, or just go into quiet mode unless you go over 75 miles an hour, send me an SMS message back to my phone.
Nice.
So I'm just doing SMS to SMS. I'm not, you know, I don't have to sync up to any web services or anything like that. It's just going phone to phone.
This application's still going on CodePlex. I know it is. So
it could be interesting, actually, but yeah.
So kind of going back to the GPS. So I guess we're not going to sue anybody if they build an application with turn-by-turn directions. Is that right? Unlike somebody?
You know, I'm not even going to touch that because I don't know. But, you know, you do bring up a good point. We have a very cool application, you know, this live search for mobile that has some great capabilities in it. And it's actually a good example to show folks about how to build an application on a device. It's talking to services that we have out there in the cloud, like Virtual Earth. This also touches other services, too. You can get turn-by-turn directions, and it'll integrate with your GPS on the device. It also does things like, I can tell it where I'm at, and I can get, like, you know, tell me the list of gas stations and sort them by gas price. So, I mean, plus movies, and all of us hopefully are using the application because I use it a lot when I travel.
Yeah. So you just brought up a great point that I don't think we hit on, is that in the SDK there are samples that people can start out.
A long list.
So is there other places that developers can go? I think that we do have, you know, kind of short how-to places on MSDN. And so what are other resources besides obviously your blog that developers can go to and either find, you know, samples, explanations, tutorials?
So there's a Mobility Developer Center on MSDN. There's also the Microsoft.com Windows Mobile area as well. And, you know, get the latest version of ActiveSync. And that's obviously not the case for Vista. But for the previous versions, you can get the latest ActiveSync. You can get, you know, pointers to other, you know, here's the latest device, here's the latest guidance. You know, all sorts of partner-oriented pieces of information where people are promoting some of our 18,000 applications that we have out there for Windows Mobile today.
Okay, cool. And I think as we're getting ready to wrap up, one of the things to point out, and we talked about this a little bit earlier before we got on, you know, why would it develop? You know, there's a lot of competing platforms out there that people can develop on, right?
Right.
It's not just, you know, the big ones out there. Why would developers? I mean, we talked about, you know, just maybe what people don't realize is the vast amount of applications that we target, the number of mobile devices that we have out there. So maybe you can talk a little bit about why should developers even care? Why would I want to go to our platform rather than maybe somebody else's?
You know, from a developer perspective, there are other competing platforms, and there are some other cool things going on right now in the industry. And that's all good for Microsoft, because we've been out there for years. We've got more devices out there than most folks do. From a developer perspective, we are, you know, another extension of that .NET and Visual Studio story of how you can build an application. You can take your existing skill sets and get involved in this pretty quickly. There are some things that you need to consider from a user requirements and design architecture, you know, capabilities, but you can get out there and get an app going pretty quickly. You can test it without having to have a real device. You can sell it without having to go and sign up for any, you know, store of any kind. So there's all good stories there. I think you also need to step back as well and look from an operations and a support capability. With our system center capability we have now, we have a very complete management story, a support story, a security story. Our devices are still the most secure devices out there for mobile usage. So I think that's all good stuff. And, you know, we have a pretty good complete story for an enterprise usage. Could we do a better job with maybe some other target audiences like consumer? Absolutely. And I think that's something that obviously the company's going to, you know, really focus on over the next couple of years. But we have a very good enterprise story and a very good, you know, application platform for sure.
So you actually, you know, just kind of, you know, I think we'll finish it up on this particular question. You kind of talked about the number of applications that, you know, that we have out there. There's 18,000 plus applications out there, not built by Microsoft, but built by the entire ecosystem.
Third parties, yeah.
So this is a two-part question. The first question is where do I find those applications? And you, John Box, what is your favorite Windows Mobile application, or maybe even your top three?
Wow. All right, so where do we find an application? So I would go to the Microsoft.com Windows Mobile site. There are plenty of places where you can search by partner, you can search by a vertical industry. Obviously, you can go to Live Search and do searches like that as well. There are other sites out there that host and list and allow people to find applications. So if people do a little bit of searching, if they can't, have them contact one of us and hit one of our blogs, because we can put up a set of links to find that kind of stuff. It's not hard. We have a very healthy ecosystem for sure. And then what was your second question was?
Your favorite Windows Mobile application, or maybe your top three if you can't pick just one.
Wow. So
that is not built into the device. So
okay.
Outlook Access doesn't count.
Well, and that's unfortunate because you say that. The enhancements that we've done in 6.1, I love the 6.1 interface. I don't know if you guys have 6.1-based devices, but I love the panel-style interface. I love, like, the you know, when you do SMS and text on 6.1, it makes it look like an IM conversation. I love that. I think that's a great interface. So there's nice additions like that. And I'm sorry you don't like Outlook Mobile, Dave.
No, I didn't say I didn't like it. I live by Outlook Mobile. I'm just saying, you know, from an application standpoint, you know, people are always jazzed about applications on other platforms. What are the applications we're jazzed about on our platform?
Let me point out one thing, because there are some like Outlook Mobile, the particular feature that comes to mind is, you know, autocomplete. If I want to put somebody's name in there, there's nice little features like that when I'm typing an email. How about if I want to go, you know, one of the things when we carry our devices around, we got our desktop closed and someone says, hey, you know, I want to ask you a question about this, and I know I've got the answer in an email that I don't have near me, but I can go do that search server and go look it up on my Exchange box and do that from wherever I'm at. I mean, those are nice little enhancements that make life more productive, right? I know that's not the third-party application you're asking about, but I think those are nice features that we need to discuss, and there's a whole list of those that we could cover. So the one application I said a while ago, that Live Search mobile application, I think is my favorite because I kind of use it a lot. And there's other things that are, the ability to open up an Office document, you know, Office 2008 document. I mean, those are all important deals that we need to be able to do.
I think one for me that you brought up that's in there that I can't get in, you know, some other phones that are out there that are not Windows Mobile is that, being at Microsoft, we send a lot of messages around that we don't necessarily want to leak out of the company.
Yep.
And the ability for me to use my phone and open up one of those rights managed emails is just critical.
I mean, absolutely.
I can't live without that. And so my other favorite one, which has nothing to do with line of business apps or enterprise apps, is I actually have a version of Age of Empires that runs on Windows Mobile. That is one of my favorite time-sucking apps of all time on Windows
Mobile.
Well,
there's a version of Guitar Hero that runs on Windows Mobile as well. It's pretty cool. Just more of a, you know, you get three strings that you work off of. So simple interface, but very cool, sounds great, and, you know, works good on my BlackBerry.
Yeah, so...
y'all hear what I just said? On my BlackBerry. On my Blackjack. I do not own a BlackBerry. Never have owned a BlackBerry.
It was like a 48 slip that I didn't even catch because I never thought it would come out of your mouth, but yeah.
No. When I talk to people all the time, like I did a mobility lab in Memphis not too long ago, and we had a lot of people who have different kinds of devices, and we had a lot of fun making fun of each other, and BlackBerry was certainly a target. But I love to find people that they want to have a real conversation about it and look at those kinds of differences of what we can do there and how, you know, we have just a really good story, not just a developer story. I think if you look at the broad mobile device platform story that we have, it's actually really good.
Right. I mean, I get, you know, like I think Brian touched on earlier, is people don't believe how many devices we actually touch, different types of devices as well. So you actually earlier you mentioned a lot of the different resources. So where can we reach you, John Box? What is your blog address where people can reach out to you for some questions?
So I have an MSDN based blog called Out of the Box. So blogs.msdn.com/John Box. And, obviously your links on your blogs are on my list as well.
That's
so,
right.
I think there's a lot of good smart people out there that are talking about how to build mobile apps. And, I just happened to, you know, wrote a book a long time ago and did some, you know, set of articles for .NET Developers Journal long ago and some MSDN webcasts and all that. But, you know, I'm still a fan, still liking it. And, you know, life is good as a mobile guy in the Microsoft world.
Great. Well, with that, any parting words of advice for people getting into Windows Mobile development? We'll leave it at that.
Life is simple. Bring it on. Don't be scared.
All right. Thanks, John. Thanks for being on Thirsty Developer.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for listening to The Thirsty Developer. This podcast is available on the Zune Marketplace and the iTunes Music Store. You can also find a link to the feed at thirstydeveloper.com. For general comments on the show or to suggest a topic, send an email to thirstydeveloper@live.com. This is The Thirsty Developer, episode number 34 for Monday, August 8th. Ugh.